Right, we're going to learn the Farbrengen that the Rebbe gave, Boker Tov, a similar setup to this year, where the 12th of Nisan is Shabbos HaGadol on 1973, Parshas Metzora. So regarding the name of this Shabbos, Shabbos is called the Great Shabbos, Shabbos HaGadol. Although we find many reasons for this, and every reason is true, because every reason is the words of the living God, as the Gemara says, both opinions are the words of the living God. There is something, how this concept is related in regards to practical halacha. As the Alter Rebbe mentions in the Code of Jewish Law, the Alter Rebbe says that we celebrate the Shabbos because a great miracle happened. Egyptian firstborn were frightened when they heard about the plague of the firstborn, and they asked the Pharaoh to free the Jewish people, and the Pharaoh refused, and so this civil war ensued, where the Egyptian firstborn were fighting against the Pharaoh's men. So that's what the Torah means when it says God killed the Egyptians with their firstborn. Their firstborn themselves killed the Egyptians. That's the reason that we celebrate this Shabbos. We need to understand something. The Alter Rebbe mentions this reason, but the question is, why does he have to mention this reason? He could have related a more geschmacka reason, a more enjoyable, a more pleasant, a more sweeter reason. What's the reason we celebrate the Shabbos? That the Jewish people fulfill the mitzvah of Hashem. At first, the Jewish people were serving idols. And Hashem told them, Mishchu, Kulachem, draw yourself away from the idolatry and take instead this sheep for a mitzvah. So it's not just that they did this specific mitzvah. It's more like they drew themselves completely away from idolatry and began to serve Hashem. That's a diametrical change from one extreme to another. So, and not only that, this change was associated with actual sacrifice, because since the sheep was the idolatry of the Egyptians, so taking the sheep and tying the sheep to their bedposts, as the Torah says, that they had to offer the sheep as a sacrifice in the 14th of Nisan, but they had to keep it in their homes from the 10th of Nisan and on. So that publicized their activity, and the purpose of this was to completely negate the idolatry of the Egyptians. So doing that was an act of absolute sacrifice. As the Torah says, how Moshe Rabbeinu told the Pharaoh that how could we possibly bring a sacrifice to Hashem of sheep in Egypt, when if we do this, they will stone us. So this is part of Moshe's dialogue, asking the Pharaoh to free the Jewish people and let them go off to some remote location to offer sacrifices to Hashem. Moshe said that if we do this in Egypt, they're going to stone us. So the fact that Moshe said this means that this is the truth. So the Jewish people had absolute sacrifice to fulfill Hashem's commandment and to ignore the danger and to bring the sheep into their homes. And not only that, this is sacrifice for something where there's no obligation for sacrifice. Like, for example, the Gemara says that if the Jewish people tie their shoelaces a certain way, and the Gentiles make a decree against the Jews, and they say, Jews cannot do this. We want the Jews to change their customs. Jews cannot be different. Then the Torah says that although there's no specific mitzvah in the 613 commandments to tie your shoelaces a certain way, but because there's a deliberate attack on Judaism, so you have to have sacrifice to tie your shoelaces the way you tie your shoelaces. So that's in another situation where there is that kind of threat, and there's a kind of deliberate attack on Judaism. But here there wasn't a deliberate attack on Judaism. It's just the Egyptians worship the sheep, and the Jews want to offer the sheep as a sacrifice to Hashem. So this wouldn't be included in the subsequent post-Sinai rule of sacrificing yourself to fulfill Hashem's commandment. You would be obligated according to the system of halacha post Mount Sinai. It wouldn't be included. You wouldn't have to give your life. So the fact that they drew themselves away from idolatry, and the fact that they accepted upon themselves to do this mitzvah, which itself is a dramatic change. They were turning away from idolatry and becoming servants of Hashem. Not just servants of Hashem in a way that they are actually defying the Egyptians in a dangerous way with sacrifice. So that would have been more of a reason to celebrate the Shabbos. Especially because the Alter Rebbe does mention this activity and how they brought the sacrifices to Hashem, and the Egyptians got scared because the Egyptians discovered. Alter Rebbe says like this: the purpose of this Shabbos is to celebrate how the Egyptians killed each other. That's the main focus of the sacrifice, of the celebration. But in order to explain why they started to fight with each other, he has to mention, well, the reason they fought with each other was because they saw the Jewish people taking the Egyptian god and tying it to their bedpost, and they asked them, why is this happening? So the Alter Rebbe does subscribe to the halacha. I mean, there are different layers of Torah interpretation. The Alter Rebbe considers this to be a valid halachic reason to celebrate this Shabbos. Part of this, the Alter Rebbe considers this event something to celebrate, but instead of celebrating the essence, the intrinsic value of the event, that we're doing a mitzvah with sacrifice to Hashem, the Alter Rebbe completely veers off and says, and we're celebrating the fact that the Egyptians killed the Egyptians. Why is that the reason why this is a great Shabbos? Why isn't it a great Shabbos because we actually listened to Hashem and took the sheep? Why is the main miracle of the Shabbos that we're celebrating the fact that the Egyptians killed the Egyptians? The greater wonder is this. There is a lesson that we learn from everything in the Torah. Because the Talmud says, I was created for the purpose of serving Hashem. Certainly, Hashem gives me the ability to serve Him. So, there must be something that I can learn from this story of the Jewish people taking the sheep. And there must be something obvious I can learn from this lesson, from this story. And the obvious lesson seems to be that I should have sacrifice to do the will of Hashem, not be afraid of those who scorn or whatever. But what's the lesson? Everything in Torah is a lesson. What's the lesson for the fact that the Egyptians killed the Egyptians? Why is that relevant to us? Why is that relevant to us now, living in exile, outside of Israel? Why do we need to know about how some Egyptians were fighting with each other? We must say that there's something about Egyptians, the Egyptian firstborn, making the civil war with the other Egyptians, something about that that is even greater than the lesson we learned from the sacrifice the Jewish people had in taking the sheep. Something about that surpasses the message we have from the sacrifice of the Jewish people to take the sheep. Something more that we learn from the Egyptians fighting with the Egyptians. To understand this, let's give a little intro. This Shabbos, the great Shabbos, is a preparation for the Exodus. That's when the Jewish people began their conversion to Judaism. They became a new entity. The Talmud says that when a convert converts to Judaism, he's like a child who is born. So the Jewish people began their journey as Jews. They became a new entity. And that's when they started to serve Hashem with their own power, which is the whole point of why the soul descends into a body. More specifically, there are two elements in serving Hashem. There's serving Hashem within yourself, and serving Hashem in regards to how you help others, how you affect others. The Talmud says, "Kshoit atzmacha v'achakach kshoit acherim." First, you must adorn yourself, then try to adorn others. Try to affect the world. So since Hashem put the whole world in the heart of the Jewish people, as the Torah says, Ha'olam nasim b'libam, Hashem put the world in the heart of the Jews, it's understood that the impact that a person has on another person and on the world, that impact exists within himself. Not only does it exist in the higher spiritual realms, but the impact you have on someone else, the impact you have in the world, starts with what's happening within your world, within yourself. A person is called a small world, so it starts within yourself. And Maimonides says, as we just learned in the Rambam, a person has to always view the world as if it's in a perfect balance, half merit and half the opposite, and one good thing could tip the scale and affect the whole world. So what's happening within you is in sync with what's happening within the world. So these two concepts, you might look at them in this way. You might say, the way you beautify yourself, the way you beautify the world, you might say that the way these two concepts exist within you are your godly soul and your animal soul. Your godly soul, it's an actual part of Hashem. That's your main you. That's your main identity. That's you. As Maimonides says, that every single Jew wants to do the will of Hashem. Maimonides is obviously talking about the godly soul. The godly soul wants to do the will of Hashem. And even when a person does a sin, the godly soul is faithful to Hashem at that moment. So the other guy in within yourself, you might say, that's the animal soul. That's how we have these two models of service of Hashem within ourselves. We have a godly soul, we have an animal soul. That's what you might want to say. But the truth is, you cannot say that the animal soul is the outside of yourself. Because the animal soul is separate from your godly soul. Your main identity is your godly soul. Your animal soul is not really you. Your animal soul is something separate from your you. Your you is your neshama. And your animal soul is, yes, it's on the outside of you, but it's too far away from you to be considered the other guy within you. What are we saying? We're saying there's two parts of serving Hashem. Serving Hashem within yourself, serving Hashem within the world. And we're saying, and impacting the world, impacting others. And we want to know what's the impacting others. Everything that exists in the world exists in our hearts and exists within a Jew. There must be these two elements within a Jew himself. And the problem with saying that the other guy within you is the animal soul is because that's not really within you. And although it says in Ayin Beis, Rebbe Rashab's discourse, that Hashem gives us he marries our godly soul with a perfect animal soul that fits with that godly soul, and they become one. They unite with each other. If I remember correctly, the Rebbe Rashab says there that commensurate with the kind of animal soul you have. You have the perfect godly soul that can elevate that animal soul, that can talk to that animal soul. Your godly soul is given, your animal soul is given to you based upon the kind of godly soul that you have. You are able to fully affect and transform the specific animal soul that you're given. So, the purpose of creation, Bereshis, is for the sake of the Jewish people. And there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. And corresponding to 600,000 letters in the Torah, there's 600,000 souls. So the creation of the world is for the sake of the souls of the Jewish people, for the neshama. So although there is, there is a great alliance between the godly soul and the animal soul that can be achieved, and they're perfectly built to align with each other, yet when we talk about the purpose of creation is for the Jewish people, for the neshama. So we have to say that these two ideas, the work that you do within yourself and the work that you do to affect others, must exist within you yourself, meaning within your neshama itself. What does this mean? So in the godly soul itself, there is an element which is called the outside. As Tzemach Tzedek says, that our feelings, in comparison to our intellect, are called the outside. And similarly, our intellect, that's what Tzemach Tzedek writes. And the Rebbe said we could possibly add to this concept and say more. We could say the intellect of a person, compared to his faith, is also called the outside. It's outside in comparison to the faith of the essence of the soul. So there is an outside within the neshama itself. The outside is the feelings, our subjective reality. The outside is our intellect and compared to our faith. So the godly soul itself has, within its own soul, has the ability to spread the wellsprings to the outside. The Baal Shem Tov asked Mashiach, when Mashiach will come, Mashiach told the Baal Shem Tov, I'm going to come when your wellsprings are spread to the outside. So the godly soul has this within itself, this ability to spread its wellsprings to the outside. Not just to spread the wellsprings of the neshama to the farthest outside, and not just to spread things to a outside of itself, but there is, in a wellspring, there is a place that's right adjacent to the wellspring. It's very close to the wellspring, and it's adjacent to it. So there is the essence of the godly soul, that's the wellspring. It's similar to a wellspring, it's different than a river or a well. And just like a wellspring flows, as the Talmud says, drop by drop. A wellspring, the Talmud says, you only need a drop to purify something. Let's say you needed to purify a very tiny object, let's say a thumbtack. So if you immerse the thumbtack in a wellspring, in the drop of a wellspring, it would still be considered kosher. You don't have to have any certain measurement to purify, for a wellspring to purify anything. And further, the wellspring, unlike a mikveh of rainwater, is only kosher if it's stationary. If the water is flowing, it's not considered a mikveh. But with a wellspring, it's still considered pure water that purifies even as it's flowing, as long as it's attached to its source. Doesn't matter how much water there is, doesn't matter the state of the water, if it's an orderly measured stationary space or if it's flowing. Why? Because the wellspring represents the essence. So in ourselves, what is the wellspring? Our wellspring is the essence of our faith. And from the wellspring, from the faith, it's spread to the outside. What's the outside? It affects our mind. It affects our feelings. It affects the outside, the exterior of the godly soul. So that's the outside as it exists within ourselves. We said in order to impact the world, everything that exists in the world exists within ourselves. What's the outside within ourselves? Outside within ourselves is our intellect. The outside within ourselves is our feelings. However, the whole point of why the soul came to this world is not for the godly soul itself, including the outside within the godly soul. Rather, the purpose of the godly soul's descent in this world is to impact actual people outside of itself, to impact the animal soul, and to impact the world. The soul came down from heaven, in the language of the Talmud, from a high roof to a deep pit. And this caused a change, an impact, a descent in the soul itself. Because the soul, as it is in heaven, is in a whole different kind of circumstance. As the prophet declared, Hashem, the God of Israel, is alive, who I stood before. He was referring to how he stood before God in heaven before he was born. I stood before Hashem in heaven. Every soul stood before Hashem, and the meaning of standing before Hashem means to stand in prayer. So the neshama is standing in the highest level of reverence and love of Hashem. And the Zohar says there's no greater service of Hashem than the service of Hashem with love. So because the neshama understands godliness and feels it in a very obvious way, the neshama, for the soul in heaven, godliness is the obvious reality, and other than anything else is non-tangible. That's the way things are in heaven. But when the Nisol descends into this deep pit, all of a sudden there's a change. Godliness becomes something abstract, and the world becomes something tangible and vivid, because the concealment of the things that the godly soul has now been dressed in, there's now a change in the godly soul's own perspective. Because if the godly soul did not have this change, there would not be a deep pit. The Talmud says the soul goes into a deep pit. So, just like if the essence of Hashem would be revealed, there would be no, we couldn't talk about creation. So too, in regards to the soul, if the essence of the soul would be revealed, the soul is above the great roof of heaven, of Gan Eden. The soul is a part of Hashem. It's a part of the essence of Hashem. So, the neshama descends into a body, and the neshama is affected by its descent. And the neshama and the soul needs meditation in order to get excited about Hashem. And after all of its efforts, it still will not ever reach, as it is in the body, the way it was in heaven. As it says in Tanya, that a tzaddik, a perfect tzaddik who serves Hashem with love and reverence for Hashem, will never reach the kind of attachment he had to Hashem before he ascended to a body, because the body simply cannot contain the kind of experience that the soul had in heaven. So, the soul, as great as it is in this world, the great soul of a tzaddik, is still an entity that loves Hashem, an entity that has reverence for Hashem. That's what the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya. We could add that the soul's descent into the world is a much greater descent than the ray of the sun emerging from the sun to give light to the earth, because the sun is a creature, but the soul is a part of Hashem, it's a spark of Hashem. And when it when the ray of the sun emerges from the sun and shines in the world, so there's not that dramatic change of going from creator to creation. The soul, as it is in heaven, is a spark of the creator, and descends to the world, it becomes a creation. And therefore the question is, why did the soul descend to this world? And the answer is, it says in Tanya, that the soul does not need to be rectified, and it didn't need to descend into this world, didn't need to descend into a body, an animal soul. And the reason why the soul descended to this world is in order to elevate the body, and elevate the animal soul, and to elevate the farthest and the lowest things. Not just...
the animal soul wasn't there until it actually was born, no?
That's why it descended, in order to elevate the animal soul. It came to this world to elevate the animal soul. So...
Don't create animal soul, you don't have a problem.
No, but the angels...
Hashem created the animal soul, and Hashem wanted the godly soul to elevate the animal soul. So... And not just to elevate something which is considered the outside and considered lower compared to not just something which is considered outside because it's lower than the essence of Hashem. The Galia soul's mission is to elevate the lowest possible things. And just like we find, in order to leave Egypt, had to be the greatest revelation of Hashem. It couldn't be an angel. It had to be the essence of Hashem to be revealed. As the Zerba Hashab says, that there was a revelation of Hashem's essence in this world, beyond the revelation at Silas, only that could have caused the Exodus. So this tells us what the meaning of this great Shabbos is. That was a preparation for leaving Egypt. The sacrifices Jewish people had in taking the sheep, although that was a great high level in their service of Hashem, but as great as that is, it's still not it's not comparable to the way the soul is in heaven. In other words, what benefit is there in their sacrifice? Because as great as their sacrifice is, they still remain an entity that loves Hashem, and not they're still in a state of, they still haven't departed from their being in a state of existing. So they're not reaching the same level they were in heaven when they are having the sacrifice and taking the sheep of the Egyptians and as dangerous as it is, that's not the greatness of the Shabbos, the Alter Rebbe says. What's the greatness of the Shabbos? Not the sacrifice. The greatness of the Shabbos is how the Egyptians went and fought with the other Egyptians. Because this is connected to the soul's descent to this world. The content of this miracle, that the Egyptians fought the other Egyptians, is that Hashem told the Jewish people in this world, as they are physical people in this world, with the Egyptians, to fight with the Hashem. There was something that changed in the physical war. The Egyptians fought with the Pharaoh. And although, in other words, their Mesiris Nefesh, their sacrifice, caused a transformation in the Egyptian firstborn, that they fought a war with the Pharaoh to cause Jewish people to leave. That's why we celebrate this Shabbos. Because that's connected to the whole purpose of the soul's ascent to this world, to affect the world. And since the Shabbos blesses the days of the week, so it's understood that there is a connection to this Shabbos and days of Pesach. This Shabbos connected to days of Pesach, and this causes this. That this Shabbos brings down the redemption of Pesach, and to be continued.
So our faith motivated them to overcome their own idolatry.
Correct.
Okay. Good.